And the last one, which we did on kind of user experience, at the end we got to one of our kind of cooler, I think, topics, which was user profile disks, and, mm-hmm. and we kind of went through it probably a little too quickly. Yeah. So we had a lot of questions coming over the break about, you know, can I use it here? What about this? What about that? So take a few minutes, because this also, you know, has a lot to do with how we set things up, which is what this segment is all about. It's installation, configuration, and how you build the VDI stack on Windows. And part of that process is the UPDs, the user profile disks. So we had a couple of questions, and we want to kind of clarify a few points before we proceeded. So you had a...
Yeah, I've got a slide here. So this kind of talks about it. The first thing that I think is pretty critical to point out, user profile disks are tied to the collection.
Correct.
And we haven't brought in that term of collections because we're going to cover it pretty deeply.
Yeah, we're going to run into that right now.
But it's really tied to that collection. And so wherever those pools of virtual machines are, that's essentially that collection,
right,
is where those user profile disks are actually there.
Yeah, if you have a desktop pool, a user profile disk is an optimization technique for that pool.
Yes.
They're not shared between pools or shared between other types of implementations. It's a technique for the pool that optimizes log on, log off, and storage for that pool. They also, all user settings, anything that gets stored in the user profile hive of the registry and the user profiles directory is stored in there. So all the roaming profiles, redirections, all that data, all that information is all part of that user profile disk. And it follows the user between the different computers in the collection. It's also pretty important to note that this doesn't function or is not available for personal desktops.
Correct.
It's only available for for pool desktops and for session desktops.
Correct. And it's not the same.
No.
So in other words, if I'm using it on one environment, I log into another, it doesn't cross over because they're tied again.
Correct.
To those separate collections.
So you would have one user profile disk folder per collection.
Correct.
You wouldn't have a unified folder across multiple collections.
So this is where we start to leverage user environment virtualization and folder redirection to ensure that my stuff is following me as I cross from
collection.
My desktop to a collection of private, to a collection of pooled,
to a remote app.
To a remote app, to a session-based desktop.
Exactly.
So it's kind of a combination of technologies. I mean, user profile disks are great when for those particular to follow along with those settings. It's basically a mounted VHD.
Yeah, it's an optimization technique mm-hmm. for a specific implementation of VDI.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a user state solution.
Correct.
It is an optimization technology for VDI that optimizes the way user state is done within a portion of the overall infrastructure.
Yep. And it, again, scoped to the collection, and
yep.
We'll get into collections. So basically, the recommendation here, deploy your user disk with pool VM collections and remote desktop session host collections.
Absolutely.
Right? There's not really a downside there.
Not at all.
If you've got multiple collections or if you want user settings to roam between VDI and those physical environments, implement UEV.
Absolutely.
Okay. Folder redirection, also an option mm-hmm. that you can also use in a scenario to provide access, roaming user access to my documents, my pictures, those kinds of things, right? It's also a way, you know, when we do folder redirection, to really centralize a user's content so that it's very easily backed up. It's more easily backed up, centralized.
Absolutely. So a question that someone is probably thinking right now is, what if I do user profile disks and folder redirection? Where do my files actually go? They go in the redirected folder
mm-hmm.
because folder redirection will trump a user profile disk because it's essentially it's going to store your user profile on the profile disk, but because my documents is redirected to a file share, it's going to put it on the file share.
And again, folks are confused here. So users can't start a session on two computers at the same time. Yes, they absolutely can. Again, because if you leverage all of the technologies, like user profile disks are great inside of that collection, inside that individual collection. If you start two sessions across two different collections, you have two separate
user profile disks.
Absolutely.
And if you point them at the same folder, they'll overwrite each other, so don't do that. Each collection would have its own storage location. You'll see me set this up here in a couple of minutes, so that hopefully will clarify a little bit.
All right, so hopefully that's cleared up any confusion. If not, Adam's going to clear up all the confusion through Q&A, so pound him with questions. All right, we want to talk about deployment.
I've never seen Adam make that gesture before.
Yeah, that's not the first time I've seen it, but that's all right. We are going to talk about deploying virtual desktops with Windows Server 2012 and remote desktop services. Going to talk very, very quickly. We've got 40-some minutes here, so we want to get through it. Show you a quick architectural overview. I really want to kind of highlight some of these improvements in Server 2012. We've done this throughout, but this is going to be very demo-intensive. HA, talk about high availability, because as more and more people start relying on these technologies, always available is a huge, huge thing.
Absolutely.
Again, I always use a joke. It used to be IT was a 9-to-5 job. Well, at least that's what the users thought it was. We were always there until midnight, 1 o'clock. Now, it's 24 hours. Yeah. Users want access to their stuff no matter what time it is there. Server manager. Server manager is where all the goodness happens. It's where
Absolutely.
It's all configured. That's where all of, you know, your diagrams and everything are. We'll hit that. And then we're going to talk about the collections themselves around pooled and personal VMs, because you, again, I'm going back to the point, and I'm going to probably pound this to death by the end of the day. A virtual desktop, it's a computer. Mm-hmm. It's a desktop. A pooled desktop, it's a computer, it's a desktop. It must be patched, it must be managed, it must be updated. And we're gonna get into a little bit of that.
So the way that we're gonna do some of these demos, because they do take a little bit of time, because I'm not faking this, I'm gonna build these things, I'm gonna actually create a pool, I'm gonna create a couple of private desktops. They gotta kind of do their disk IO bit.
Yep.
So we're kind of gonna do, we'll do a little bit, do a few slides, come back, do a few slides, come back, do a few slides. And so let's kind of this, some of this stuff run in the background. So when we're ready, we'll jump into it first a little bit, and then we'll kind of go from there. We'll kind of jump back and forth quite a bit as some of these jobs that take, you know, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 minutes kind of run in the background of the session.
So do you want to jump in and get started, or do we want to cover the architectural diagram, or?
Let's jump in and take a look at Server Manager and how it's kind of set up in there.
Okay.
Because that kind of, I think, will help relate to it a little bit. So.
Sure.
So have a look at my screen here for a second. So what I've done, this is Server Manager, and hopefully everyone has seen Server Manager on Windows Server 2012 by now. And what I've done is I've added under this All Servers node all the assorted computers that are involved in my RDS deployment. I've got a few extras in here as well because I've got my cluster and whatnot, but specifically in my RDS deployment, I've got RDS1, which is a session host machine, Server1, which is a session host machine, and then WS2012 VM Host 1, which is a remote desktop services virtualization host machine. Okay. Now, if you've ever seen a demo, and if you haven't, by the way, go on Edge. I'm sure there's a bunch of these on Edge, of something called Quick Deploy.
Yeah.
For VDI, it's literally click a button, you get VDI. They've built into Server Manager, as you go through and go add roles and features, and you click next, and you choose remote desktop services, and you click next, and you choose Quick Start. It's not even an option for me because I've already got portions of an infrastructure deployed. But if you choose Quick Start, it's simply going to say, do you want a session host? If you say you want a session host, you click next, it goes, okay, I'm done. And it installs everything, and it reboots everything, and it deploys everything, and you get, you know, remote app. If you go, I want VDI, I want virtualization, I want virtual desktops, it goes, okay, where's your Hyper-V server, and where is your sysprepped VHD?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two things you need, a Hyper-V server and a sysprepped VHD, and it will install all the Hyper-V stuff, it'll install the remote desktop stuff, it'll clone your VHD, it'll make your differencing disks, it'll give you a pool with two desktops. Literally 5 or 6 clicks, you've got VDI. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes for the wizard to run. That's been demoed 10 ways from Sunday. What I've got here is kind of, you know, the IT pros version. I don't want to go, you know, boss goes, hey, can you do VDI over lunch? Quick start, you can do VDI over lunch. You can have lunch and still have time to do VDI. But if you're doing this for real, you're going to want to plan it out, and you're going to want to place the roles and components where it makes most sense for your infrastructure, for workload, for management, and whatnot. So that's kind of what I've done here, is I've deployed, I've pre-deployed a few components. I've got a connection broker server deployed already, and I've installed the remote desktop services components just through Server Manager on RDS1, And you can see the roles right here on the side that have actually been deployed. It's got the connection broker, the session host, and web access. And this was all done, by the way, by just going add roles and features, pick the server, pick the roles and features, no configuration whatsoever. I've got another server as a session host. And I've got a virtualization host, and this is where my pooled and private VMs are actually gonna live. So the first example that we're gonna do is how to actually set up a desktop pool. Then we'll go back a bit later on and we'll set up a desktop, a private desktop, and we'll do remote app, and we'll do sessions. Those are the four I'm gonna show you to set up. So this is a really simple thing to do. We've got servers, right? So this is my health view of the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Kind of look down through the, you know, your kind of server manager, bubble up everything into one view, which is real nice. And then I set up VDBI by creating collections. And so what I'm gonna do is go tasks and create a new virtual desktop collection. And it's a very simple wizard. Quick start, by the way, you don't see any of this. You just go, and it's done.
And it sets it all up, right?
But it's one server. Everything's on one single box. So it's, you know, proof of concept and a click, you know, VDI in a case. So collection name, pool desktops. Desktops, I spelled it right. Collection type, pooled or personal. Now notice the green check marks. If I go personal, I get different things. If I go pooled, I get different things. And the two different ones here are permanent user assignment to the desktop and administrative access, i.e. make the account that's assigned local admin, doesn't happen with pooled. With personal, you don't get recreate every time you log off. It doesn't reset, and you don't get user profile disks.
So again, a lot of folks on the Q&A panel have been asking, define collections. It's really, really simple. It's a grouping of a specific type of deployment, whether it be sessions, pool desktops, personal desktops, right? Or even sessions that are also tied in a collection as well.
And there's a really good way to define this is when you go to RD Web Access, you're gonna have an icon for every collection you have.
Yes.
Right, so you can have a desktop pool of low-end desktops, or right, which will be one collection. So maybe these are desktops with two CPUs and two gigs of RAM. And you have a second collection, which is mid-range desktops, which are 4 CPUs and 4 gigs of RAM, and then high-end, which are 8 CPUs and 16 gigs of RAM. Mm-hmm. And when you choose the collection you log on to, and you get a desktop in that collection, and they're administered and managed as a unit, they're patched as a unit, the permissions are controlled as a unit, the policies are controlled as a unit. So this is a collection right now. It's my first pooled desktop collection. I need to choose a template. So I need an existing VM, okay? This is the VM the settings are going to be copied from. Again, if you ran quick start, they wouldn't ask you this. It'd simply go, do you got a VHD? Cool, we're done, right? It's that simple. Now, why I would choose to go this route is perhaps I wanna go on Hyper-V, and I want to go in and maybe somehow configure that master image here a little bit. I want to go into the settings on Hyper-V, and I want this to be a 2 CPU VM. So I'd simply just configure the settings in that, the dynamic memory settings. We had talked earlier about throttling network. I can come in here and enable bandwidth management on the networks. And so whatever these settings are, they're just copied from that master template. Mm-hmm. So we'll choose that one. Little bar, kind of scroll across the screen just a little bit there. Now, this is a sysprepped image. That's one of the requirements. We've got a slide towards the end about building this gold image. It's sysprepped, so we've got to provide an answer file, or we don't, and we just let this thing build the answer file for us.
Oh.
This is easier. if you want to do the answer file route because you want to really highly customize things, by all means, you just, you know, standard, you know, Windows deployment kit, build an answer file, automate it.
So MDT really kind of can come into play here to really, if you've got an MDT built environment for maybe even your normal workstations, you can actually leverage those MDT files to build what you've got.
So the virtual desktops look and feel the same. They got the same customization as the physical desktops. Where the computer account's going to go, what users and groups, how many of them, the prefix, these are the poo desktops. We'll just slightly adjust that a little tiny bit. virtual desktop settings. Now, if I have more than one Hyper-V host, maybe I've got a cluster because clustering is supported now, I can choose how many to put on each Hyper-V host. I've only got one, so we're just going to go put them all there. And then where do I want to, and this is where this gets really cool, where do I want to store the VMs? So I can store them locally, I can put them on a share, or if I'm in a cluster, so I'm doing this on a cluster node, I can put them on a CSV volume. So the desktops become redundant and highly available. Now, if this were, you know, a fairly production environment, I'd probably want clustered Hyper-V servers holding all my virtual desktops. In a pooled scenario, maybe not, because they're going to come back to a different one anyway, but in a private scenario, absolutely, especially these are executive desktops. I'm going to put them on, I'm going to store them on a file share. It's Hyper-V over SMB, really good thing to do for VDI. We'll talk more in the next module as to why, but so HV data, HV store is my storage location. Yep, that's correct. And then auto rollback when the user logs off. User profile disks, right? Collection specific folder. So I've got a folder already created here, which is HV data, HV store, UPD. Let's copy that. And we'll just drop that in here. Confirmation, and with that, I am done. I now wait for this wizard to finish. What this wizard's going to do is take an export, a drop down, and if I time this right, I should be able to see this. There we go. An export of the master. It's going to copy it to the shared location and then create differencing disks for each pooled VM, import them, boot it, let sysprep run with the answer file that it creates and injects, create a snapshot, save it, and go to the next one. And so that'll take on this environment I've got right here. This will take probably 5 or 6 minutes to run. So we're going to let that go.
Okay.
We'll come back and check it in a little while.
Let's jump over and talk about, because we've started implementing some of this stuff, so let's talk about it from an architectural standpoint. Okay. Because I think it's important to note there's a lot of components that exist within remote desktop services that, you know, you see them in the diagram, kind of get an understanding of what they are and how they work. So first of all, the remote desktop gateway, okay? That's essentially where I'm going to connect through.
Well, if you're outside the LAN, generally.
Right, and you can use it, you can have the remote desktop web access, which is the web portal, and then you've got the gateway. So this is how I remotely connect in and access things. And then I am passed off to the connection broker.
Yep.
And the connection broker is essentially going, it's traffic cop.
Correct.
Ideally is kind of how to do that, right? So you've got your collections on the back end. You could have desktop virtualization, like personal, you can have pooled. You've got your session hosts, your remote app programs, or your session-based desktops. And then those are all licensed through a licensing server. Very, very important to note. And we're going to get more into licensing in the last module of the day. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to cover it here because I am the wrong person to talk to, as are you.
Adam's the only person I've ever seen who can actually make licensing make sense.
There's a shout out. All right.
I don't know if that's a gift or a curse.
Right, exactly. Then you've got that connection broker. You've got a SQL database that is kind of that central store of all of the data that is involved there. It's important to note all of these things because when we start talking about getting into that, getting into high availability, the components that exist here, so with your gateway, your web access servers, your connection broker, and then all of your hosts, whether it be a virtualization host or session hosts, all of those can be spread out and separated for and add more, basically for high availability. But with SQL Server high availability, you have to follow the SQL Server high availability rules and deploy it with the SQL stuff. So this one-stop shopping kind of thing you can do through Server Manager in this to get that high availability. With SQL Server, you can do clustering, you do.
Yeah, I mean, in the real world, you'll go, hey, DBA, I need to store stuff in a database and it can't go down. and they'll go, here's your database, and you don't worry about it.
Right, absolutely.
Because they've taken care of it.
Absolutely.
Hopefully.
Yeah, well, we never know about the DBAs, right? So we showed, and this is key, that new server manager experience where everything is kind of in a single location, everything is centralized, you're managing everything, you're configuring everything through a single thing, managing all of your servers, managing all of the components of this, it's awesome,
yeah,
right?
It's server manager in the past was a view into the environment. This is now an orchestration tool for the environment.
Yeah, I can manage all of the permissions. I can manage anything, all of the properties of my remote desktop services. I can implement high availability
through
server manager, which is awesome. Okay, that's cool. But see, I'm going to be setting up a lot of these environments. And I'm one of these guys that I want to set it up once, Corey. I won't forget about it. PowerShell.
Two things, you know, and I've said this, I've done, I think, four of these jump starts now. And everyone, I say the exact same thing. PowerShell IPv6 job security. Telling
you're,
you right
you're,
now.
You're exactly right. When you start managing these things at scale, PowerShell and scripting is the ideal way to do it. Yes, and I like pretty graphical things, but I like repetitiveness, and I like that repetitiveness to be consistent. So if I'm going to do it more than one time, I'm going to find a way to script it, and I'm going to keep that script around forever.
Or you just find a way to delegate it.
That's true.
And Corey? I think Adam in the little bit later on is going to talk about some of the scale limitations, because there's a point with like server manager where you reach a point where you kind of got to use PowerShell because it just becomes cumbersome in the UI. And so he's going to talk about some of those points. But if you're up to, you know, the thousands and thousands and thousands of desktops, you're going to want to do things in PowerShell, because this, you're going to want to scope things appropriately. Jump back on my screen for 1 second, guys. Look, it's chugging along. First one's done. It's done. The sysprep is imported. It's saving. So this pool's just chugging along and being created as we move. There's the other little progress bar that's showing it. So
we're still in create mode. Yep. We're still in fill time mode, right?
Well, not so much. I can actually close this and move on to the next thing now if I want to, but
okay.
we can keep going.
Gotcha.
So.
We'll keep going. We're going to get more into the Hyper-V aspects of this.
Yeah, in the next one.
But we do have support for cheaper storage options, and we're going to spend a whole bunch of time on it, so let's just skip over that. Being able to do that centralized or automated pool virtual desktop management, right, where you can deploy and manage these virtual desktops within a single location, we're kind of showing that at this point. Any new applications or updates in that template, it recreates the pool. That's pretty critical there. A highly available connection broker. This is one of the dings, and I don't think I'm stepping out of bounds here, that our connection broker previously was not nearly as scalable and durable as we've got it now.
That goes for a number of components in this framework. They have gotten so much better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, before you jump on, go back
sure,
one
no,
quick.
Yeah.
The bottom point there on the last slide, personal desktop patching, just as a point of note, for the most part, when these desktop VMs are not being used, they're going to be in a save state on the server.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be essentially powered off. Now, how do you patch things when they're powered off? But when you combine configuration manager and you combine a Windows Server and VDI, it can wake up the desktops to patch them.
Mm-hmm.
So it can tell Hyper-V, hey, I know you're VDI, I know you're in a save state, it's time to put the patch on. Come out of save state, put the patch on, go back to sleep. And so those items are part of the overall solution. It's not something you have to specially address.
Yeah.
You know, to schedule it, or, you know, write a script to bring them on at 5 o'clock or something. It'll just happen.
Again, you know, kind of addressing the cost aspect and some of these things. Scenario-based deployments, we only install the required role services. This is the thing. We've started this with Windows Server 2008. Server 2008 R2 followed along with it. You're only installing what's necessary.
Absolutely.
You're only installing the components and the role services that you need for the type of deployment that you need. Can you install all the role services and everything onto a single box? Yes. Is that ideal? Probably not, right? Particularly for an availability situation, right? You can, when you do quick start, it's essentially go through, answer a couple of questions, everything gets installed onto one single individual box. It's really simple to really kind of evaluate this because of quick start, right?
Yep.
It's like, okay, is this right for me? Is this right for my business? I want to get this up and running very, 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 very fast.
Yep.
It was an hour and a half for us to set up this entire thing when we did it in my office yesterday. Quick Start's going to do it
15-20 minutes. And 19 to 19 and a half minutes of that is file movement.
Yeah.
The other 30 seconds is you going next, go. Coffee. So the pooled, like the pooled one is still going.
Okay.
We can do a session now.
You like? Let's do a session.
Okay. So if I right click this and just do task status details, it's going to tell me, hey, you're done. Maybe it's actually completely done. So the tumor created, the job's not quite done. It'll be, oh, now it's done. There we go. Cool. How's that for timing? It's done.
It's done.
So we're going to do session desktop. So this pool desktop, now that it's done, by the way, we can go kind of take a look at a couple of things here. If I look at the properties of it, this is where I go. By the way, I love Server Manager. I have one sort of gripe with it, and that is it's a little inconsistent when you right-click versus go to the tasks menu, so you may have to kind of poke around a bit to whether you know, go to your collections here and right-click on it versus sometimes go to the tasks menu. You'll see there's a little bit of a different set of tasks here. So sometimes finding the right thing you want to do is a few clicks away. So we go to our pool desktops, and we go tasks, and we go edit properties. We can see the virtual desktops that are in there, their location, user groups are allowed to use them. There's all these different settings, such as whether you allow audio, video playback, recording smart cards, plug and play drives. So you control with this collection. We talked about, you know, collections a unit of policy. This is the types of policies that you can enforce at the collection level.
So this is one way to prevent external hard drives from being utilized.
Correct. So maybe it's allowed on collection A, but not allowed on collection B. And it's through those settings that you actually govern that. If we go back to our servers, to our overview, I've got an RD web access server already deployed. That's kind of mandatory when you initially set up everything, you add a web access server. And when you add a new collection, it automatically configures that collection to appear in the web access server. There's no work you have to do other than create the collection. So if I now go to that web access server site, which is right here, there's nothing there right now. If I just hit F5, I've got a collection.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is now my pooled desktops collection. I click on it, and it's going to connect me to one of those VMs. So the collection's done, active, ready to be used. It's now loading the VM, which means it's resuming it from a save state. And away we go, and you'll see in just a second, I'm now logged onto the VM. I'm not going to wait for the log on. I'm going to move on. But it'll get there. So that's the first collection, right? And that's a pooled VM-based VDI collection. The next one we'll do is a session-based VDI collection. And so for that, I'm going to add a new session collection over here. So this is just another way to do it. I can go to my topology view, right-click, session collection. It's going to look very much the same. Call this session desktops. The host server I want to use, I'm going to use server 1. Now, if server 1 didn't have the RDS session host component already installed on it, this would actually do the install for you. You don't got to pre-install it. This will install it, reboot it, continue where it left off. Users that are allowed to use it, user profile disks. So we'll do a separate folder called UPD session. And away we go.
A couple of things I want to cover real quick, Corey, while we wait for progress bars to go. There was a question in the Q&A panel where somebody had asked, hey, does the Quick Start only do sessions? No.
No.
Quick Start can do everything.
Well, not quite. The two defaults it's going to give you are, by the way, it's done. Ooh, I had an error. I'll fix that error.
Okay.
I didn't pre-create the folder. My bad. I'll pre-create the folder and run that again. The two things it does out of the gate are session with remote app, publishing, calculator, WordPad and Paint, and pooled VDI.
Okay.
So those are the two outputs. When you do Quick Start, you choose session or desktop. If you choose desktop, you get a pool of two desktops.
Okay.
You can then go in and delete that and do a personal one. You can go in
yes.
and configure it, which is how I got to this point here. I ran Quick Config, and then I removed everything.
Okay.
And then I just customized it from there. Or if you do session, you get a couple of remote apps published.
Okay. So those you can remove those apps and
remove and publish different ones. Yeah. You can remove them all, which will switch it back to a desktop mode.
Right.
So yeah, it's pretty simple and straightforward.
A couple of things also to note. The server needs to have hardware assisted virtualization.
Right.
It must be a member of the domain. You cannot install the RD connection broker if it's running on a domain controller.
No, you can't.
And of course, administrators have to belong to the local administrators group on the machine to which you're installing. And then of course, the error that you just came across, I actually have it here to call out in my notes, that network share has to be existing and configured for storing user profile disks.
Oops.
Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Oops.
As you just demonstrated. But no, it's great. It's a perfect demonstration.
Yeah.
And why
the error handling in Server Manager.
Or the fact that I see this happen all the time because I do it in my demos, and I was trying to avoid it from happening to you. But that's all right.
Thanks for that. That would have helped 5 minutes ago.
We're all always happy to help, buddy.
We're all love up here.
Let's see. How are we doing on your?
Oh, it's done. You can kind of jump back here for a second. So that session guy is now done, and I'm ready to kind of go use it. Right? There's no connections at the moment, so I can see what users are logged on. But if I jump back over to my web access site, there it is. Click it, and I'm in.
And the great thing is you can actually rename that so it shows up, you know, my company apps or whatever.
I'm doing it deliberately based on the type so we see the distinction.
Sure.
I go back into Server Manager, and if I just do a refresh over here, there's the connection, and I can do the usual sort of RDS type tasks on that connection. Let's do another one. Let's do another session collection. This one's going to be, but this one I'm going to do is remote app.
Okay.
So this is going to be. Remote. What? Apps. Now let's do that. Session host. You can't do remote app and session desktop on the same server. It's one or the other. So I'm going to choose this other guy, RDS1.
Okay.
And we're going to leave this basically default. I'm going to skip the user profile disks, and we're just going to go ahead and let that one run, just for the sake of keeping this overly simple. And you'll see how quickly this will actually pop through. And what this is going to do is an important difference in how this is going to run, I want to show you. So that's done. And I've got another one called remote apps. And if I go to my website and I hit F5, you go, wait a minute, I want it remote apps. I didn't want another variation of a desktop, which is what I've essentially got here. Here's how you switch this to remote app. All you do is in Server Manager, you go down here under this remote apps collection, you go, I want this to be remote app, I want to publish programs. So just slightly down in the UI, publish remote app programs, it's going to connect to that server and go, what's the stuff you want to publish? You go, well, I want to publish PowerShell, Task Manager, and the character map.
Because, you know, everybody needs character map.
Exactly. So I hit publish. Makes those changes, and it now changes from a desktop mode session host to an application mode session host. So we can edit each one of these properties. You can look at some parameters, command lines, what users are allowed to use them, file type associations, all the stuff that you would traditionally see with remote app style applications. If I go back to my website, hit F5, the remote app icon for the desktop goes away, and now I get the applications actually being published. So that's that one. So we've got pooled, we've got session, we've got remote app. There's one left,
okay,
which is how to do personal desktop. So I'll kick that off now.
Okay.
That probably won't finish before we go to break, but that's fine.
Okay.
We can take a quick peek at it after lunch just to see that it's
all
finished.
Right.
And then we can finish out what we've got left.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So to do a personal desktop implementation, you've probably already kind of gathered this from the steps I've used already. It's just another collection.
Mm-hmm.
So create virtual desktop collection. Collection name, personal desktops, type, personal, auto create and manage images. By the way, if you have another method for making these desktop VMs, you can use it. You don't have to have Server Manager build these things for you.
No, absolutely not.
You could
not.
Pre-build them using some other method.
And that's actually what probably most people are actually going to do, because they've got their process of doing this, right?
Yep.
Where you've got already a virtual machine running.
Yep. So choose our template. By the way, if you notice real quick when I clicked this, it popped up an error and said, someone else is using this master template. That's fine. You can use it for two. You just got to be aware that you're impacting two collections by it. I've only got one here, so I'm just going to use this one over again. User assignment. Important point to make here. Because this is a one-to-one user to desktop configuration, you've got to choose how you're actually going to assign. You're still running. Assign those desktop images. This is taking a little bit longer than it should ordinarily take. You've got to choose how you're going to assign those user images. And your choices are, when you first log on, you simply, user grabs the first one that's available and that becomes their permanent desktop. Or you can pre-assign. For example, if you have more users than you have desktops, only some of them are getting it, you can pre-assign them. I'll do a pre-assignment here. Or you can just go automatic. So I'm going to go disable automatic, do it manually, and add the user as a local admin.
Okay.
Right. One of the big compelling reasons you would want to do personal desktops to begin with is because the user needs local admin access to run applications or whatever the job is they got to do. And so what this does is take, when you assign a user account, they just become a local admin on the machine. They get admin rights. Now we're going through the same sort of sysprepy type stuff that we did with the desktop pool.
I like sysprepy stuff.
And so this one, it's got a semi-reasonable prefix, so we'll leave that alone. I'm gonna do one, just because of the time this takes. Unlike with pool desktops, where it creates a differencing disk, it's gonna duplicate the VHD.
What about snapshots in your template VM? What if I've got snapshots in my template? Is that?
Yeah, you can have a snapshot. It's going to take whatever the applied snapshot is.
Okay, perfect.
And use that one, which is how you generally would do updating as well, because you can create snapshots and then apply the most current snapshot or roll back and just regenerate the pool, and it'll actually take the snapshot for you.
Awesome.
So go ahead. Again, same placement sort of rules, same storage sort of options. I'm going to put this one on the local disk, just to distribute the I/O a little bit. And this is going to be. I just want to verify real quick that. I love this touchpad. So I just want to verify real quick. Bear with me one sec. That folder is in fact the folder I want to use. D VM store sounds good. We've got some extra files in there. That's fine. I'm going to delete this. I deleted all this stuff that we used in the demos earlier to kind of recreate it again.
Yeah, so understand.
That was just left over. DVM store is fine. Confirmation and go. And so this one will take a bit longer because it's got more file movement to actually do. So we'll sit this here and let this go and come back a little bit.
So while it's chewing on it, Corey, let's talk a little bit about implementing high availability. Which is, the more we start relying upon this underlying infrastructure, whether it be to deliver our applications, to deliver sessions, to deliver VDI desktops, the more we need to start looking at high availability, right? And whoops, if I go the right way on my slides here. So we've made some pretty significant changes in Windows Server 2012 in regards to high availability and RDS, so remote desktop services, right? New in Server 2012 is the ability to have active high availability for your brokers. It's a key piece. The broker is an absolutely key piece. It says, I'm a user, I'm coming in through here, you need to direct me to where I'm supposed to be, right? Mm-hmm. We have the ability to scale out file servers, right? And again, if you want more information on this, Rick does some great stuff out on Microsoft Virtual Academy or on his Jumpstart where he talks about scale out file servers. This does require Microsoft SQL Server, particularly when you start getting into that high availability pieces. And I like your thing. I'm delegating SQL Server over to my DBAs,
I don't do SQL. I go, I want SQL, and here's what it has to do. That's my implementation plan for SQL Server.
All of these pieces that we're looking at here on this slide, if you truly want high availability in your infrastructure, all of these components need to be highly available, need to have multiples of, right?
So if we want to just jump back into my screen for 1 second, this is how easy it actually is to do, right? So once you go, hey, DBA guys, give me a SQL Server for VDI, you come down to your connection broker and you go, all right, connection broker, configure HA. Your DBA is going to give you this thing called a connection string. Mm-hmm. You don't know what it is. Just type in what he emails you to type in. folder to store the files, and then a DNS round robin name. And you'll configure the DNS round robin name. So you have more than one broker. You basically map all their IPs to one DNS name, and it'll just juggle them around. But you hit next on that a few times, and you've got it configured. Then you right-click again. You go add connection broker. And it adds a second server as a connection broker, configures it properly, and now you're HA.
And you tell it where and what server you want it installed on, all through this single server manager console.
Two right clicks.
Reality is you could actually do this from your desktop if you were using the remote server administration tools. You
could I kind of am here because I'm on my DC, which is just where I've thrown everything for the purpose of the demo. But I'm configuring stuff that's somewhere else right now. There's nothing locally on the DC if there's anything to do with VDI.
Yep.
So two right clicks, you get your HA and your connection broker. For your virtualization hosts, that's traditional Hyper-V clustering. So it's not a VDI thing, it's a Hyper-V thing. You cluster Hyper-V servers, this is cluster aware, you're good to go. On the session host, it's traditional terminal server clustering, which is a well-worn path. There's lots of documentation. Mm-hmm. This is aware of it. The web access is IIS clustering.
And that's actually a good point. If you drop over to my slides, you'll see how we transition this and how we change it. Let's look at our remote desktop web access, remote desktop gateway, connection broker, our licensing server, our virtualization hosts, and our session hosts. Now it changes. But these are things that we're used to clustering.
Yep.
We know how to build web farms. We're used to building web farms. This is a tried and true methodology, right? And those web farms are used whether it be your web access server or your gateway, internal, external.
One of my guys recently told me he was going to build a web garden.
A web garden? Because it's smaller than a farm?
Do we need fertilizer for this web garden? Now, I eventually learned what it was, but it was a new term to me entirely, a web garden.
A web garden.
Yeah, it's like a little flower pot of applications or something.
Okay. You'll see that we cluster our remote desktop licensing servers. Licensing is important. And then Hyper-V clusters for your virtualization hosts and a session host farm.
Yeah, see, the licensing is the one thing I wouldn't cluster. Well, it's licensing. Well, I want it to go away.
Your stuff.
Yeah, I guess.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, buddy. And then, of course, make sure you've got that whole database piece.
Adam, the PM of terminal server and VDI and all that stuff, is now looking at me with a really black look. What do you mean you wouldn't cluster your licensing? The most important part.
So when we look at how we configure active remote desktop connection brokers, this is a new piece in Windows Server 2012 in this particular area of high availability and scalability around remote desktop services. We used to only support active-passive clustering for your connection brokers, but we've changed that to support an active-active mode, right? Basically, there's an internal database inside of the connection broker where all of our configuration and our runtime data is stored for the deployment. Like, where's the user logged on, right? What VM on which host, which apps are published, those kinds of things. So once the broker is configured in this kind of more high availability piece, you've got multiple instances of this broker, all of which have to go and tie to that SQL database. Because instead of when we've got it on a single piece, all that broker, where the users are and everything else, that stuff's on an individual server. Now, if you want to scale it out and have an active broker, that's where you really need that SQL Server pieces, right? And then once we've got it all up and running and that SQL database cluster is going, they all report and respond to the load at the same time. So you've got the great thing about having an active broker there is that you're responding to not only availability, but also from a scale perspective. And a lot of folks tend to kind of get sucked into the whole, I need high availability just so my servers are running. And they sometimes forget, look, I want more than one server just to scale out, right? So obviously you mentioned that you need to have that round robin DNS name so that they they all authenticate and respond to the same name. Pretty easy to set up. Those of you guys familiar with DNS, round robining and DNS, really, really simple to kind of get in and deal with. You could also use things like Central Certificate Store, another feature in Server 2012, to really provide a single location where all those certificates, like for the web farms, are. Again, it's another feature. We're really kind of combining all the great features inside of Server 2012 to leverage this and take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. So I want to quickly cover, in the few minutes that we've got left, connection broker, configuration prereqs. I think we've covered this enough. SQL Server. At least SQL Server 2008 R2 so that your connection brokers can use them. Right? Mm-hmm. The firewall on the SQL Server must be configured to allow SQL Server access from the connection brokers. So you need to open up the proper ports. A network folder to share all of your database files. The SQL client has to be installed on your connection brokers. That static IP address, don't use DHCP, particularly when you're dealing with high availability. Have it static. Mm-hmm. Have a DNSA resource, which is that DNS round robin piece that we've got there, right? And then finally, there's this piece, this resource authorization policy, or this wrap policy.
It's specific to the gateway.
Yes.
And you can certainly cluster it. If you have more than one gateway, they should use a shared policy location. So you don't have to, you could conceivably configure each gateway manually to be the same, which if you've only got two of them, it's not that big a deal. Or you can centralize it, and if you centralize it, then if one of them goes down, they still both continue to function, but if you only get one place to make the policy changes, mm-hmm. And it eliminates the potential of, you know, one gateway being different than the other, and the issues that will potentially create. So.
Yeah, absolutely. How are we going? Are we chugging along there?
Yeah, well, this is not going to be done for a while. This is going to take another 20, 30 minutes because I've got to move around about 30 gigs worth of data across a bunch of network connections back there.
All right, so really quickly, I've jumped ahead because a bunch of the slides were on all of the stuff that you showed us when we went into high availability. So basically, you're using Server Manager to enable that once we get past that SQL Server, and then you build your web farms. Mm-hmm. Same. The same way we've always built them. Let's talk about patching and updating your collections. So we built these collections. We built a pool collection. We built a personal collection here. Now, I got to manage these things, and I have to update them, and I need to patch them. So when we patch and update our pool collections, we do this by updating that master template.
Correct.
The reference VM.
Exactly.
And then what we do is we recreate all the virtual desktops.
So here's how you do it. Have a look on the screen.
And this is for pool.
Yeah, this is my, well, you could do this. You could do the same. You could recreate all your desktops with private if you wanted to, but it'd wreck them.
Goes against the reason you wouldn't do it.
But yeah. So on your pool desktops, under your virtual desktops area, you just go tasks, recreate. And it's simply going to say, okay, what's your template? And so what I've done is at this stage is I've updated the master.
Okay.
So I've gone in and it's patch Tuesday. I've patched the master, and I want to now, distribute those patches everywhere. I simply go and recreate. It now implements a user logoff policy, which is, do you want to basically go now, get off, I'm recreating them? Do you want to do it as users log off?
Yeah.
Or do you want to do it at a fixed point in time? And it's got to do a little bit of analysis on the VHD here for a second. Then it'll come back and actually give you those policy choices.
So,
but this is really all you have to do.
So if I've not logged on yet, the next time I log on, I'm going to get that new virtual machine.
The newer version, yeah.
If I'm already logged on, we have an option whether to force log off,
correct,
which generally in most situations is not ideal,
yeah,
right? Unless you've got somebody maybe.
For a lot of people, it's going to be a case of what the user pattern is. Either A, they're going to say do it at 3 in the morning because nobody's on, mm-hmm, or they're going to say do it as people log off and just roll the upgrade out.
Sure. Yeah. If I'm logged on, it's important to note, if I'm logged on and working, my VM's not affected. It's not
correct.
Affected
no,
by
correct.
This change so long as you've not.
As long as the administrator
do
decided not to affect.
Right,
you.
Exactly. Exactly. I talked a little bit about snapshots, mm-hmm, and using snapshots inside of pools, right? This is, do you find this kind of the best way to get to that end state is by leveraging the snapshots?
It's a way of doing easy version control, mm-hmm, because you can just snapshot it, start it, make a change, snapshot it. So if you find yourself in a state where, oh darn, I've screwed something up. You can revert to the previous snapshot and just roll back again.
So it's really ideal when we go through like massive change control, having a rollback mechanism in place to automatically get you back there. As a best practice, when you snapshot as a best practice, I should read this. Start with a snapshot of an ungeneralized Windows 7 or Windows 8 virtual machine. Then you generalize it, then you shut it down, then you snapshot it.
Correct.
The generalized piece does a lot of things in there. It's going to take a lot longer if you've already generalized it. Now you're going through and rebuilding that snapshot.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you update a virtual machine, revert to an ungeneralized snapshot, delete the generalized snapshot, update the VM, generalize, shut down, snapshot, lather, rinse, repeat. Yeah,
it sounds complicated. It's really not. It's really not.
It's mostly around licensing an army and dealing with those fun games, right?
Absolutely.
If you don't have KMS servers and some of those things. So updating personal collections, little bit different, but not too drastic, right? It's very similar to what we do with our physical desktops.
You treat it no differently. It's a long-term install of Windows that you manage long-term. It just happens to be on fake hardware, not real hardware.
So Windows Server Update Services,
System Center Configuration Center, Manager, Windows Update, all those things you would normally do. The only thing that is slightly different is the fourth bullet point down. If they happen to be saved, it's smart enough to wake them up and do the patching and put them back to sleep again. Mm-hmm. So that's a big thing, because in the past that would have had to have been orchestrated with some scripts or something of that nature.
I like the last point too here, making sure you give consideration to update schedules, making sure that not all the personal VMs located on a single piece of storage in that
configuration manager is smart enough to know that, hey, these desktops are VMs.
Yes.
And it's going to stagger the patching cycle. It's not just going to go, hey, you 100 guys, patch now.
Yeah, and that's one of the changes that's in System Center Configuration Manager 2012 that really has kind of improved that. That used to be a thing. The other thing, too, is we can actually detect in System Center Configuration Manager that this actually is a virtual machine. Mm-hmm. So when we were doing hardware scans and everything, it's dealt with there. And also, from a pool desktop perspective, with System Center Configuration Manager, one of the challenges that we had in previous versions is that anytime I'd launch a new pool desktop, it would add another resource record inside a configuration manager. No more.
Yep.
We see it detected as a pulled resource, and you're only using the latest.
Absolutely.
So for you, if you log on to a system, I'm looking at your latest version inside of System Center Configuration Manager.
So I guess at the end of the day, ConfigMan is now VDI aware.
Yes.
And knows what not to do to mess up something in VDI. So it works out a whole lot better.
Absolutely. We are getting caught up. You're still chugging along there. So I think
This is not going to be done. I have nothing else to do here.
So I think what we should do here, I'm just going to have a quick 30-second look here. You know what? Here's a question.
There should be a slide there on the billing the gold image, which we ought to address.
Let me grab that slide here. Somebody asked a question in the Q&A. Okay. What's the difference between Server 2008 and R2 in 2012? I think a lot of what we've been covering over the last little while.
Go look up the Windows Server 2012 jumpstart that Canadian Rick and I did last year, and you two will meet PowerShell Stig if you want to find out what's actually different, because we did 2 days of drink from a higher fire hose of why it's different. It is remarkably different.
Yep.
It is just amazingly different.
So here's your slide that you want to preparing the master gold or gold VM, right?
I think there's two slides on this.
Absolutely. Okay. You want the second one?
This is fine. No. So just kind of as sort of a closing point on this one, there's some things you ought to do when you're building that initial gold image to make sure it goes well. It's the equivalent of what the desktop deployment guys are going to do. Mm-hmm. When they're preparing that image, they're going to push out to 1,000 desktops. Mm-hmm. It's the same sort of thought and consideration. Minimum metastatic memory, if it's configured as 1024, dynamic, must be at least 1024, must be connected to a switch that can communicate with a domain controller. If you're on quick start, the switch is created. Install all the applications in a work group, not a domain, so set it up as a work group machine initially with all the applications on it. Go ahead. There you go.
Good. Next.
There you go. Patches or updates, configuration changes, and then run sysprep ubi generalized mode VM.
Yes.
Now, the mode VM doesn't turn up in the help. If you go sysprep ? it doesn't show you mode VM.
No.
Which eliminates all the hardware detection stuff. Now, here's, you know, Corey's trick of the day. If you want to get, if you want to do this real easy, you just want to get it off the ground, go get an ISO for Windows 8 Enterprise, go download WIM to VHD.
Yeah.
And go WIM to VHD, ISO file, enter, and it'll spit out a VHD file you can drop right into the wizard.
Yeah.
No configuration, no booting, no sysprepping, nothing. If you want to do a quick start, that's the easiest way to do it. WIM to VHD, just a default install, and that will work fine, completely fine.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Jack Perry asked the question, where are certificates applied when you do high availability across the web farm, right? That's where those certificates are. You've got your web servers and your
certificates. Yeah, I should actually mention, it's worth doing, where do you configure the certificates? I had in my notes to do that, but I didn't. Drop down here for a second. Gang in the back, please. So if I go to my collections, or sorry, my servers, my overview, and I go deployment properties. So if I go tasks, deployment properties right here. I don't know why that jumped over there. This is where certificates go.
Yep.
Okay. So you need and obviously an SSL certificate. Recommend a wildcard certificate because you're going to deploy this across multiple servers.
Agreed.
So SSL wildcard certificate. And then you simply come in here. So for example, if I'm going to replace it with the one that's already there, but to show you the process. So for the RD web access certificate, select existing, choose the path, and I've got an SSL certificate just sitting on a file share, which is a wildcard certificate, which is an exported PFX file. So I just go through that process and hit apply, and it'll apply the certificate. So for each role that you've got in there, the recommendation I give people is to get a wildcard and just apply it to each one of them. And that basically puts the certificates wherever they need to be.
Right, exactly. Somebody asked, say it again, is it WIM to VHD? W-I-M, WIM, that's yeah. The Windows imaging format that we use. So WIM to VHD, I've actually posted that up there in the chat.
Perfect.
And then another question is, can I deploy VDI on a domain controller? So the answer in short is kind of, because there are rules that you can't have like the connection broker on the
You can put the web access on there, and you can put the gateway on there. I wouldn't recommend it, but if you're doing like a PLC demo, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
The only thing that can't go on a DC is the connection broker.
Yep.
So at a minimum, if you're going to do a PLC of some type, at a minimum, you want to say, how small can I make this? Three operating systems, domain controller, box to have all the RDS stuff, and a Hyper-V server. So those three pieces, and you're set to go. And if you want how many physical boxes? Two, one with Hyper-V on it with a DC and a server to run all the roles, and one that can manage, which is what I've got back here, on the floor, a couple of laptops, with SSDs and 32 gigs of RAM.
Absolutely, absolutely. Folks, we've reached the meal break portion.
We have.
Of today. So we will be back here.
About an hour or so?
About an hour or so. What's that?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. That would be 1 o'clock Pacific time. So do your particular translations, which is 1 hour from now. So again, folks, thanks for joining us. We're three modules in. We still have a whole bunch of stuff to get through
and get to.
Come on back in 1 hour. This is Using Microsoft VDI to Enable New Work Styles Jumpstart. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
Have a sandwich.